Picture this, you're sitting down to watch a live poetry performance. The first poet takes the stage, and as they begin to read, they're accompanied by a live jazz band. If this sounds intriguing, well, you're in luck. International Jazz Poetry Month returns to Pittsburgh on May 2nd. The festival features more than 50 artists, including local jazz icons and poets from Algeria, Cuba, Sudan, and Ukraine. Tickets to watch online or in person at City of Asylum's home on the north side are free. Get yours at cityofasylum.org before they're gone.
Today on CityCast Pittsburgh, we made it through the 2024 election. Just kidding. If Yin's listened to this show, you know the primary was just round one. Today, we're talking about the winners and losers, what a few of those victories may tell us about what's coming in November, and why we should all be paying attention to those write-ins, even if we never get a full and complete accounting of everything they said. It's April 26th, a special election news roundup. I'm Megan Harris, and here's what Pittsburgh's talking about. I'm with CityCast contributor Natalie Bensavanga. How are you doing? How late were you up on Tuesday night?
Not as late as I thought I would have to be, perhaps. So yeah, it was kind of what I expected, to be completely honest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's start with turnout. What were you expecting headed into this week?
Okay, so my problem, Megan, is I am always overly optimistic for no reason. There's never going to be any evidence for me to be that optimistic. So I walked into my polling place around 12:30 in the afternoon, and I always ask, hey, how many people have come through? And there had only been 50. So to me, that was sort of depressing. I was like, oh, they said it had been pretty quiet up until that point. So my husband went later in the day and he said it was busier, but we all know that these in-betweeny kind of elections never get the turnout. But I wish that they would, because that's what really sets us up for success or defeat in the generals.
Yeah, yeah. It turned out 27% of eligible voters cast ballots here in Allegheny County. But I guess that's even lower than the last presidential primary in 2020. That time it was only 36%. I mean, granted, last time there were at least more choices for president, and that usually like rules the ticket, right?
Yeah. And I do think, you know, I hate to say it, but my gosh, with everything going on in the world right now, I don't think people feel very energized by the political process. And I don't feel as though people are being heard in the ways that they would want to, at least from what I see in various social media spaces. So I think that sense of apathy is really carrying itself into the lack of representation that we're seeing when we're going in to vote.
Well, actual results time. Let's talk about the winners and losers, because there's some interesting stuff here. Congresswoman Summer Lee beat out her challenger, Bhavani Patel, for the Democratic primary. Here's a little clip of Summer Lee's victory speech.
And there were a lot of people who wanted to convince us that we could not be pro-peace and win in this district. Democracy to be reflective, and they want black people, and they want brown folks, and they want poor, and they want working class people to go to Congress. But when we get there, they want us to put our head down, and they want us to be silent, and they want us to do things the same way that has always been done. But this district has taught us over and over that we are ready for bold solutions. We are ready for courageous leaders who lift up the most marginalized and vulnerable. They want to see people.
So I interviewed both Bhavani and Summer a few weeks back on KDKA radio. And, you know, it was interesting chatting with both of them because they just had such different approaches to the campaign and to how they were going to be out there with the people and what they were saying and what they were representing. And so I was not at all surprised by the outcome because, as we know, I think in particular this district, people are very much in support of Summer Lee, and she's garnered a ton of support and has raised a ton of money during this campaign cycle. But I will say I was impressed by how much attention and backing Bhavani Patel was able to also get in this district. It was a really contentious race. But I do think that standing for something and not just against something was the edge that Summer had had all along.
This got so much national attention, particularly Patel's criticism of Lee not voting with Biden enough. Lee has been really critical about America's role in the war on Gaza. But I guess when I just like step back from it, like, is that the expectation now? Are party members supposed to just be in lockstep all the time? No exceptions, or you're just not doing it right? Like, that seems like a weird bar.
I also don't think it's healthy for a democracy that we don't question the people in power who have the ability to change things for the better and sometimes do not. And I do not think it is anti-democratic that Summer and many others criticized the Biden administration for the handling of how things are going on, not only in Israel and with Gaza, but with a lot of things happening here domestically. I think it's important that our leaders represent the best of us, and sometimes they need to be encouraged to do just that by their constituents and other representatives.
Yeah, and I mean, as it relates to Gaza, you know, Lee called for a ceasefire early on. She just voted against an aid package to Israel, and she's been one of the first, if not the first, candidate up for re-election who's been really vocal like that. I'm wondering if you think her win signals anything about how some other candidates who've been critical of Biden's policies might perform in future elections.
No, absolutely. I think this is a signal, not just that we could stand up and stand together in the fight for, you know, collective liberation, but more importantly, that maybe Biden is the one out of step. Maybe the administration is the one out of step with the voice of the people, because I've talked to a lot of different groups and legislators, and I do think that a lot of people don't want to see what is happening in Gaza continue. And I think, once again, that blind loyalty to a party leader, that is just not the vibe of the Democratic Party. So if you don't agree with Biden on this one issue, I think you should say that. I think you should stand up and talk about why you don't and base it in fact and understanding. And, you know, I do think Biden can be encouraged to change his mind on things. And I think we've seen the Biden administration move a bit on the issue related to Israel and Gaza and acknowledge now what is going on over there. And that
barely, they are doing it, but barely. It's really soft language.
Yes. It is soft language, but I don't think it would have happened at all if it weren't for all of these collective voices in these spaces. And really, I think that's what democracy is about, is having to listen and direct conversation to the ways in which we can improve the lives of the many and not just the few.
And just a reminder, Summer Lee was the incumbent in her race this round. She'll now move on to November, where she'll face Republican James Hayes. He ran in his primary unopposed. Do you like to dance? Look at beautiful art, eat gourmet snacks, people watch? Well, mark your calendars for Friday, June 7th for one of my favorite parties in Pittsburgh. It's Mattress Factory's 25th Garden Party. The theme this year is make-believe, and it's all to celebrate and support the creatives in our community. There's going to be live music, an open bar, an art auction, and probably my favorite, the costume contest. Trust me, I will be judging yins, and so will everyone else there. Be playful, be imaginative, explore your magical realm, because this is a theme party. You want to come dressed to impress. You must be 21 and up to attend, and rest assured, every dollar raised goes directly towards supporting the museum, its art, its education, and all of its community outreach initiatives. Get your tickets now to the 25th Mattress Factory Garden Party. They are in our show notes and online at mattress.org. So next up, let's go statewide, the row offices, which I feel like keep getting more and more interesting to me. I don't know if that's because I'm getting older and nerdier. So this is like treasurer, attorney general, auditor general. As you've looked at these kind of like big picture, were there any big takeaways for you?
I think Malcolm Kenyatta in particular has been one that I have been following his career. I interviewed him a few times when he was running for Senate. I really, really like him. I've always liked him. I think this is a very strategic move for him to be going this route with Auditor General. And I think it is a savvy and a smart route to gain more recognition on the state level and see what he can do. I think he is definitely one to watch. And I'm really excited to see where his trajectory takes him.
Yeah, he was going up against Mark Pinsley. One thing I saw reported in several outlets is whether either one of them had a finance background or anything like that. And I think that's something that folks maybe get a little confused with the role of Auditor General. You're kind of a project manager. Like, you're making sure that people get stuff done and they do it correctly and they do it well. It really doesn't have much to do with accounting, which has been an interesting learning for me this cycle.
Oh, yeah. I'm in the same boat as you are. Like, I always have to double and triple check, what do each of these positions actually do, and who do they benefit? And I'm not afraid to say that or be that person because, you know, I think we all had one year of civics in high school if we were lucky. And then you're kind of thrown to the wolves when it comes to elections and learning. And that's something that I really focus on when I do the radio show, too. And I had Mohammed Burney on last weekend, who is the chief of staff of City Councilman Bobby Wilson. And we talked about the attorney general race. And I had him explain what an attorney general is. You know, they're the lawyer for the people.
No. I think it's vital to keep reminding ourselves and also reminding each other that it's normal to ask these questions. Like, it's fine. This is how we learn and how we stay kind of abreast of all the issues. I think Attorney General was definitely my number one. The field was so crowded and so many of our past governors have used it as launching pads.
Yes. It
matters so much for things like the opioid settlement cases, certifying mm-hmm. elections, most recently abortion access. So yes, a local boy won the Democratic nomination, Eugene Tipisqually. He used to be our Auditor General and beat out four other Democratic contenders. One of the things that DePasquale talked about on the campaign trail again in his victory speech on Tuesday was his experience as the child of someone who was incarcerated. So his dad mm-hmm. was a Vietnam vet, as he tells it, injured in the war, got addicted to painkillers, ended up in prison, and says that that shaped his perspective on things like the opioid epidemic and the criminal justice system. I'm curious if you followed him back when he was auditor and maybe what you would expect if someone like him were to ultimately take on that office.
You know, I did not follow him early on in his career, but I will tell you, I think these are exactly the kinds of people that we need in these positions of power because there is an understanding of the reality of the world and there's a sense of compassion that is built in. And I think we need more of that with people in positions of power in certain spaces.
And the other one, of course, Dave Sunday, who won for the Republicans, York County prosecutor, only had one contender to deal with, got 70% of that vote. His top priorities, he says, are going to be the opioid epidemic, public safety. At a debate last month, though, I think this one might speak to some of your passions, Natalie. He said he doesn't believe that the state constitution guarantees a right to abortion, that should be the legislature's decision. He said he'll follow the law, quote, follow the law, whatever that law is, as determined by the legislature, end quote. DePasquale, by contrast, says if he wins, he will make sure that votes don't get suppressed, wants to prosecute hate crimes against LGBTQ+ people, and said verbatim, I want to protect abortion access. I am intrigued to see that this is already part of the conversation for Attorney General. How do you think abortion is going to play out in the election cycle from now till November? We've got a long time to be watching commercials and talking about this stuff.
It is going to be centered. We've seen Democrats literally win just on this issue alone. It is an issue that doesn't just get me all riled up, but so many other people as well. If we don't have the rights over our own body and the decisions, whether or not we start a family or whether or not we can or want to carry a pregnancy to term, I mean, we have nothing. And so the fact that I just can't imagine having an attorney general that is not in support of abortion as essential health care. We've already been seeing the nightmare that is playing out in states where it's banned, like in Texas and Ohio, and the horrors of what is happening to birthing people in those spaces. So for me, that's just like a non-starter.
Yeah. I mean, how do you think that, I mean, Pennsylvania is a swing state. We do, I think, overall have more registered Democrats than Republicans, but it's not, it doesn't ensure that we're going to go blue in any way. How do you think abortion access, because it is so polarizing, will play out for something like a Roe office? Because it's like not something a lot of people think about, but it will have an outsized impact on whatever happens now that Roe v. Wade is overturned.
Yeah, I think the reality is everybody that we're electing needs to let us know where they stand on the right to bodily autonomy, because they all have an impact on that issue in their specific way. And if you are somebody that thinks of women and birthing people as second-class citizens, I probably don't want you any near decision-making in the state. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And actually, I don't know how polarizing the issue really is to the average person. I think politicians and extremists are very, very loud around it, and they've made their feelings known. But look at what has happened in middle America when they've put it on the ballot. It's you know, they've protected abortion rights in a landslide. So I think to the average person, it's live and let live. And right now, I feel as though it's becoming so much more polarized because of the way media interacts with it and the way we have allowed a lot of extremists to take positions of power in certain spaces.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen polls that talk about how, you know, a lot of people are in favor of abortion as healthcare, full stop. But I also, mm-hmm. I can't discount, like, I grew up in extremely religious spaces, and I don't mm-hmm. engage with them in the same way anymore in adulthood, but I still remember what those messages were like, and there's a lot of America that still thinks that way.
I agree with you, but I think there's a lot more of us that don't. And I'm just going to leave it there.
Okay, let's talk about president. Obviously, Donald Trump and Joe Biden won for their parties, but there was some nuance there. Let's start with Joe Biden and this whole conversation about whether folks would vote uncommitted. This was the effort to put pressure on the Biden administration to get Democrats to write in the word uncommitted on their ballots, the write-in vote, to try and force some movement on a permanent ceasefire in Gaza, among other things. So we're not going to know for a while how many people wrote in that uncommitted versus, say, like Steely McBeam or whatever. You can write anything there. Executive producer Mallory Falk actually just sent over some reporting that says we may never, like never, never know how many uncommitted voters there were over in Philly because of how they tally them in Philadelphia County. Anyway, the number of write-ins did go up pretty dramatically in Pennsylvania this year. It was double that of 2020 just here in Allegheny County, and way more than that in Philly. So, Natalie, do you think that this is going to put pressure on the administration to make any kind of move?
I think it's important that we always protest in any way that we can things that we find to be unjust. And I think this was a very interesting and creative way for people who are feeling frustrated and disillusioned with the current two-party system to be able to vote in a way that felt authentic to them and resonated with their value system. And whether or not it has an impact on, you know, the Biden administration, I found it inspiring that there were so many thousands of people around the country that were saying, hey, isn't there another way? Isn't there another thing that we can do or say? I interviewed Jill Stein, who's running for the Green Party, about a month ago.
And wasn't on the ballot here in Pennsylvania because you we have a closed primary system, so you can only vote Republican or Democrat for the primary.
Correct, which is a whole other conversation around open and closed primaries. But her and I did discuss this whole concept of rank voting and other ways in which other countries work through their feelings of disillusionment with the system. And if you talk to a lot of people on the left, I do think that they think the two-party system is broken and that it's perhaps two sides of the same coin. Now, I don't necessarily feel that way, but I understand why people are feeling apathetic and like they're not being heard. And so I think it's important that we acknowledge the thousands and thousands of people that are saying, hey, I'm not okay with how this is going. And I hope that the Biden administration continues to keep an open mind and listen to some of these concerns, because these are people that may just sit out in November. And then I think it could actually become problematic for the Biden administration, considering there were some very thin margins and very little room for error, especially in a lot of these swing states.
I mean, just here in Pennsylvania, I think Biden pulled out the 2020 November election, like the real one, by like 80,000 votes, according to state tallies. But once again, I think this speaks to whether people are going to come out, whether they're going to feel like it's worth their time, their energy to go to the polls and do the dang thing.
Well, and we have to remember, to your point, what you just said about us having a closed primary. I think we're only one of 10 states that still has a closed primary. That's disenfranchising 1.3 million potential voters who are registered as independents in the state of Pennsylvania. So that in and of itself, I mean, who knows what could happen with those people that didn't get a chance to vote and how they may vote come November or not vote.
Well, and to be clear, I always hope that people do, in fact, vote. But since we're talking about how votes get counted, the other thing I think worth bringing up is all the zombie votes this time in Allegheny County. So a zombie is when you vote for a candidate that's already dropped out of the race. And there were a lot of them. So 10,000 more Republicans voted for Dave McCormick for Senate as voted for Donald Trump for president. And at least some of those had to have gone to Nikki Haley, who has been out for weeks. So zombies are normal. They happen in every election. But in an area like Allegheny County, I still think it's worth mentioning just how many Republicans, plugged in, engaged Republicans, came out to make their voice heard and still said, nah, not Trump, not this time.
Yeah. I mean, I think that says a lot about where he's at right now and his popularity. And I think the reality is we have two candidates running on the big tickets. And putting aside the issue of Gaza, I think both of them are very old and a little bit out of touch with what the average person is dealing with. And I think people are also feeling that as well. So is there time for new energy and new leadership ahead of us? I mean, there's going to have to be. But what does that look like? And who do we want to see come down the line next? That's me. I'm very curious and very interested in what's going to happen after this election cycle.
Folks are getting involved. They're organizing. Like, I mean, look across town. Students and community members have been occupying Schenley Plaza this week in support of Gaza. Now, that's a long road to running for office, but they are politically engaged. They are trying to make sure somebody has heard their message. It's cool to see people engaging in their community in this way, with or without the vote.
No, I agree with that. And voting is only one part of our civic duty. The other part is organizing. It's getting involved with causes that you believe in. It's, you know, talking with your representatives to help make change happen. There's so many things that people can do. So whatever way they're connecting to their civic duty, I think we should be encouraging that.
10,000%. Last one for us today, the U.S. Senate race. I mentioned Dave McCormick just a minute ago. He and Bob Casey both ran unopposed, so we knew what was going to happen. But now the real battle begins, because the outcome of their election in November could determine who controls the Senate next year. I'm wondering how you expect this race to maybe ramp up in the next few months, or maybe what issues you're expecting them to each push in their own campaigns.
I think the whole greedflation thing is something that is going to continue to be front and center. And I think it was McCormick that had a video of him. You know, he was in some cafeteria or in some restaurant. He was like making food. So I think they're both going to really try to attach themselves, I think, to sort of the working class values, the unions, the minimum wage, you know, raising that or not raising that. I think it'll be back to a lot of our labor issues. And Bob Casey, I think, has a good track record with those things. So I'll be curious to see how McCormick tries to position himself as the everyman while also living a life very much as a multimillionaire.
I mean, Casey's a lifetime politician at this point, and Dave McCormick is a CEO. They're not the everyman, neither one of them.
No. But I do think McCormick has a harder mountain to climb, or a bigger mountain to climb, when it comes to showing that he's the everyman, considering he hasn't done things for the everyman in the ways that perhaps Bob will be able to showcase. It's going to be entertaining.
True. True of many incumbents.
Yes.
They are naturally going to be the ones with a stronger record to show. Well, if you want to hear more about Pennsylvania politics, I hope you'll stick with us over the next few months. We promise to keep it fun, keep it important, but also complain when we, too, get sick of all the political ads. Natalie Bensavanga, thank you, as always. If y'all want to catch more of Natalie and her very strong passions, you can tune into KDKA Radio on Saturday afternoons. Natalie, remind us where that is on the dial.
Yeah, you can check it out at 100.1 FM and 1020 KDKA. It's also on the Odyssey app and at kdkaradio.com.
That is all for today here on CityCast Pittsburgh. One final reminder, today is your last day to sign up for a CityCast membership with the added bonus of getting Sophia's three favorite Pittsburgh treats straight to your inbox. We really do appreciate all of you who signed up this week and all the weeks before. You know, if we're going to make this whole free news podcast thing work, it's going to take memberships from folks like you. Find all the details at membership.citycast.fm/Pittsburgh. Our music is by Benji. Mallory Falk is our executive producer. Sophia Lowe is our producer, with help this week from Elizabeth Kama and AK Almumen. Francesca DeBecco is the senior newsletter editor. And I'm your host, Megan Harris. We'll be back on Monday with more news from around the city. Have the best weekend, everyone. Yeah, I'm opinionated, dang it. And any opportunity to exercise it is great with me.